During the long climb down the winding staircase, Cornelius whispered many more words of direction and advice. Caspian's heart was sinking, but he tried to take it all in. Then came the fresh air in the garden, a fervent hand clasp from the doctor, a run across the lawn, a welcoming whinny from Destria. And so King Caspian X left the castle of his fathers. Looking back, he saw fireworks going up to celebrate the birth of the new prince. All night he rode southward, choosing byways and bridle paths through woods as long as he was in country that he knew. But afterwards he kept to the high road. Destria was as excited as his master at this unusual journey, and Caspian, though tears had come into his eyes at saying goodbye to Dr. Cornelius, felt brave and, in a way, happy to think that he was King Caspian, riding to seek adventures with his sword on his left hip and Queen Susan's magic horn on his right. But when day came, with a sprinkle of rain, and he looked about him and saw on every side unknown woods, wild heaths, and blue mountains, he thought how large and strange the world was, and felt frightened and small. As soon as it was full daylight, he left the road and found an open grassy place amid a wood where he could rest. He took off Destria's bridle and let him graze, ate some cold chicken, and drank a little wine, and presently fell asleep. It was late afternoon when he awoke. He ate a morsel and continued his journey, still southward, by many unfrequented lanes. He was now in a land of hills, going up and down, but always more up than down. From every ridge he could see the mountains growing bigger and blacker ahead. As the evening closed in, he was riding their lower slopes. The wind rose. Soon rain fell in torrents. Destria became uneasy. There was thunder in the air. And now they entered a dark and seemingly endless pine forest, and all the stories Caspian had ever heard of trees being unfriendly to man crowded into his mind. He remembered that he was, after all, a Telmarine, one of the race who cut down trees wherever they could and were at war with all wild things. And though he himself might be unlike other Telmarines, the trees could not be expected to know this. Nor did they. The wind became a tempest. The woods roared and creaked all round them. There came a crash. A tree fell right across the road just behind him. "Quiet, Destria, quiet," said Caspian, patting his horse's neck. But he was trembling himself, and he knew that he had escaped death by an inch. Lightning flashed, and a great crack of thunder seemed to break the sky in two just overhead. Destria bolted in good earnest. Caspian was a good rider, but he had not the strength to hold him back. He kept his seat, but he knew that his life hung by a thread during the wild career that followed. Tree after tree rose up before them in the dusk and was only just avoided. Then, almost too suddenly to hurt, and yet it did hurt him too, something struck Caspian on the forehead, and he knew no more. When he came to himself, he was lying in a firelit place with bruised limbs and a bad headache. Low voices were speaking close at hand.
"And now," said one, "before it wakes up, we must decide what to do with it."
"Kill it," said another. "We can't let it live. It would betray us."
"We ought to have killed it at once, or else let it alone," said a third voice. "We can't kill it now. Not after we've taken it in and bandaged its head and all. It would be murdering a guest."
"Gentlemen," said Caspian in a feeble voice, "whatever you do to me, I hope you will be kind to my poor horse."
"Your horse has taken flight long before we found you," said the first voice, a curiously husky, earthy voice, as Caspian now noticed.
"Now don't let it talk you round with its pretty words," said the second voice. "I still say..."
"Horns and alibuts," exclaimed the third voice. "Of course we're not going to murder it. For shame, Knickerbrick. What do you say, Truffle Hunter? What shall we do with it?"
"I shall give it a drink," said the first voice, presumably Truffle Hunter's. A dark shape approached the bed. Caspian felt an arm slipped gently under his shoulders. If it was exactly an arm, the shape somehow seemed wrong. The face that bent towards him seemed wrong, too.
He got the impression that it was very hairy and very long-nosed, and there were odd white patches on each side of it. "It's a mask of some sort," thought Caspian, "or perhaps I'm in a fever and imagining it all." A cupful of something sweet and hot was set to his lips, and he drank. At that moment, one of the others poked the fire. A blaze sprang up, and Caspian almost screamed with the shock as the sudden light revealed the face that was looking into his own. It was not a man's face, but a badger's, though larger and friendlier and more intelligent than the face of any badger he had seen before. And it had certainly been talking. He saw, too, that he was on a bed of heather in a cave. By the fire sat two little bearded men, so much wilder and shorter and hairier and thicker than Dr. Cornelius, that he knew them at once for real dwarfs, ancient dwarfs with not a drop of human blood in their veins. And Caspian knew that he had found the old Narnians at last. Then his head began to swim again. In the next few days he learned to know them by names. The badger was called Truffle Hunter. He was the oldest and kindest of the three. The dwarf who had wanted to kill Caspian was a sour black dwarf. That is, his hair and beard were black and thick and hard like horsehair. His name was Nicobrick. The other dwarf was a red dwarf with hair rather like a fox's, and he was called Trumpkin.
"And now,"
said Nicobrick on the first evening when Caspian was well enough to sit up and talk,
"we still have to decide what to do with this human. You two think you've done it a great kindness by not letting me kill it, but I suppose the upshot is that we have to keep it a prisoner for life. I'm certainly not going to let it go alive, to go back to its own kind and betray us all."
"Bulbs and bolsters, Nicobrick," said Trumpkin. "Why need you talk so unhandsomely? It isn't the creature's fault that it bashed its head against a tree outside our hole, and I don't think it looks like a traitor."
"I say," said Caspian, "you haven't yet found out whether I want to go back." "I don't. I want to stay with you, if you'll let me. I've been looking for people like you all my life."
"That's a likely story," growled Nicobrick. "You're a Telmarine and a human, aren't you? Of course you want to go back to your own kind."
"Well, even if I did, I couldn't," said Caspian. "I was flying for my life when I had an accident. The king wants to kill me. If you'd killed me, you'd have done the very thing to please him."
"Well, no," said Truffle Hunter, "you don't say so."
"Eh?" said Trumpkin. "What's that? What have you been doing, human, to fall foul of Miraz at your age?"
"He's my uncle," began Caspian,
when Nicobrick jumped up with his hand on his dagger. "There you are," he cried, "not only a Telmarine, but close kin and heir to our greatest enemy. Are you still mad enough to let this creature live?"
He would have stabbed Caspian then and there if the badger and Trumpkin had not got in the way and forced him back to his seat and held him down.
"Now, once and for all, Nicobrick," said Trumpkin, "will you contain yourself, or must Truffle Hunter and I sit on your head?"
Nicobrick sulkily promised to behave, and the other two asked Caspian to tell his whole story. When he had done so, there was a moment's silence.
"This is the queerest thing I ever heard," said Trumpkin.
"I don't like it," said Nicobrick. "I didn't know there were stories about us still told among the humans. The less they know about us, the better. That old nurse now, she better have held her tongue. And it's all mixed up with that tutor, a renegade dwarf. I hate him. I hate him worse than the humans. You mark my words, no good will come of it."
"Don't you go talking about things you don't understand, Nicobrick," said Truffle Hunter. "You dwarfs are as forgetful and changeable as the humans themselves. I am a beast, I am, and a badger what's more. We don't change, we hold on. I say great good will come of it. This is the true king of Narnia, and we beasts remember, even if dwarfs forget, that Narnia was never right except when a son of Adam was king."
"Whistles and whirligigs, Truffle Hunter," said Trumpkin. "You don't mean you want to give the country to the humans?"
"I said nothing about that," answered the badger. "It's not man's country. Who should know that better than me? But it's a country for a man to be king of.
We badgers have long enough memories to know that. Why, bless us all, wasn't the High King Peter a man?
Do you believe all those old stories?
Asked Trumpkin.
I tell you, we don't change, we beasts, said Truffle Hunter. We don't forget. I believe in the High King Peter and the rest that reigned at Caer Paravel as firmly as I believe in Aslan himself.
As firmly as that, I dare say, said Trumpkin. But who believes in Aslan nowadays?
I do, said Caspian. And if I hadn't believed in him before, I would now. Back there among the humans, the people who laughed at Aslan would have laughed at stories about talking beasts and dwarfs. Sometimes I did wonder if there really was such a person as Aslan. But then sometimes I wondered if there were really people like you. Yet there you are.
That's right, said Truffle Hunter. You're right, King Caspian. And as long as you will be true to old Narnia, you shall be my king, whatever they say. Long life to your majesty.
You make me sick, Badger, growled Nickerbrick. The High King Peter and the rest may have been men, but they were a different sort of men. This is one of the cursed Telmarines. He has hunted beasts for sport, haven't you now?
He said, rounding suddenly on Caspian.
Well, to tell you the truth, I have, said Caspian, but they weren't talking beasts.
It's all the same thing, said Nickerbrick.
No, 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 said Truffle Hunter. You know it isn't. You know very well that the beasts in Narnia nowadays are different and are no more than the poor, dumb, witless creatures you'd find in Calormen or Telmar. They're smaller, too. They're far more different from us than the half-dwarfs are from you.
There was a great deal more talk, but it all ended with the agreement that Caspian should stay, and even the promise that, as soon as he was able to go out, he should be taken to see what Trumpkin called the Others. For apparently, in these wild parts, all sorts of creatures from the old days of Narnia still lived on in hiding.